Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Word is a proud media partner of Latitude Festival 2012. For more information and to purchase tickets, go to www.latitudefestival.co.uk.
You're listening to a podcast from The Word.
We're joined in the pod by Chas Hodges. It's a delight to have you here. We'll
Thank
supply
you very
the
much,
applause.
Folks. It's a joy to be here.
It's got a very busy Jubilee weekend coming up with loads and loads of gigs. You might be playing in your local marketplace or your local pub.
Yeah, I'm in Romford Market. I think at Sunday, and there's so many. It kicks off the Half Moon on Friday, tomorrow. Half Moon Putney. And then on from there, right, until Tuesday.
It's a mini royal tour.
But of course.
Okay. Well, look, Chas, it's delightful to have you here.
Yes, nice
And what
to
I
be
propose
here.
To do is to go right back to the beginning.
Far
and come
away.
Through your immensely illustrious and varied career and come right up to date.
Okay. All right.
And
you're
where,
far
the
away.
Way we normally start on Word Podcast is we ask, what music was in your house when you were growing up? Can you remember?
Most definitely. It was my mum playing the piano. She brought us... My dad died when I was three. We lived in Kent, and we came back to London, and not very well off to live with my grandparents. And my mum virtually brought us up playing the piano. But it was just... that's why piano and music is a big part of my life. And not only did it help to feed us as we were growing up, it was always when anybody came round, they always had big smiles on their faces when the music was being played. So it. So
was she a professional piano player? Where did she play?
No, she learned to play when she was a kid. I mean, actually, I found all this out after. She used to go out busking with my great-grandfather when she was about five, six. They'd pull up outside a pub somewhere. And had a little harmonium, and which we still had at the time, which my nan gave to the rag man, which I never forgave her for, but that's another story. This little portable harmonium, and... That was the start of her musical career.
So we're talking about in the 20s and 30s?
Yeah, I would say. Well, she was born in 1913, so if she was five, about 1920. Yeah,
oh,
you're
really?
Dead right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So then you come back. Was this during the war as a child?
We moved to Kent in 1947. My dad, he committed suicide. We never know why. The day before my fourth birthday, then we came back to North London, as I said, to live with me nan and granddad and my great-grandfather. And, I mean, it was a pretty... not a lot of money about, but it was a happy childhood.
So this is Edmonton, Tottenham, round there?
Yeah, right, North London, Edmonton, yeah.
So there was no record player in the house?
No, we had a wind-up gramophone a bit later on, but in the very early days, there was no record player, no. I had the old radio, and a lot of those used to have, you know, Housewife's Choice on, and used to hear things like Fats Waller and who was my mum's favourite piano player. That's when I first heard of him. But no, there was no record player. It was just a piano and a harmonium. Or if a party was going, my great-grandfather used to play the penny whistle. My nan played the mouth organ. So there's plenty of music going on in
there. Sounds like a Giles cartoon.
Yeah, you're dead right, yeah.
So what was the first time that you played an instrument? What did you first pick up?
First time I ever played... well, my mum always wanted... I remember her saying, I'll start at the beginning, she used to play down the pub at the on the Edmonton Green, and she dearly wanted there to be a musician in the family. My older brother wasn't interested at all. He was into football and fishing, and so was I. I remember my mum coming home one Saturday afternoon. She'd been playing up the pub, and she said, "Oh, there's a piano teacher," and he was quite a well-known piano teacher around North London who was a fan of hers. He used to go in the pub and watch it. And he said, "Have you got any?" He knew she you know, she didn't have a husband. He said, "Have you got any kids?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "If you've got any kids," he said, "I'll teach them piano for nothing." And I remember coming home excited, and I still feel slightly disappointed about my reaction to this day. She said, "If someone's come in and wants to, he's a great piano teacher, and he said, if I've got any children, he'll teach them for nothing." He said, "How about, why don't you go?" And I'm like, "I don't want to learn the piano." I was just interested. At the time, I was like playing football out in the street, going fishing and anything else but playing the piano. But not long after... I mean, I remember her saying to me, "Nan, oh, well, there's not going to be a musician in the family." And I still remember her saying, so it must have stuck with her. I could hear her voice now. But not long after, in the mid-50s, I remember hearing a record, and this sound, what I thought was fantastic, turned out to be Lonnie Donegan. Found out he played the guitar. I played the song that I heard it. "Well, I want to bring a little more, Sylvie. I want to bring a little more now. I want to bring a little more to Sylvie to know it every little once in a while. Do you love me, Sylvie? Do you love me now? Do you love me, Sylvie? Lord, every little once in a while. I want to bring a little more to Sylvie. I want to bring a little more now. I want to bring a little more to Sylvie to know it every little once in a while. I want to bring a little more to Sylvie. Every little once in a while."
Fantastic. Of course, hugely influential, Lonnie Donegan.
Yeah.
The whole generation of British musicians. Really unusual sound, wasn't it? Because he was a, you know, British guy doing black American blues.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, never heard it before. It's brand new to every budding young musician in England. All these black blues blokes we'd never heard of.
No, but
Lonnie brought them to us.
It was filtered through Lonnie, wasn't
it? Yeah, yeah.
So did that make you keen on playing a guitar?
Most definitely. I mean, that sound, I must remember that. Well, that's a great sound. And I said to me, "Mum, have you heard that record, Lonnie Donegan?" And she got excited. She said, "What?" I said, "This guitar is fantastic." She said, "If I got hold of a guitar somewhere, would you learn to play?" I went, "Yeah." Anyway, my uncle Alf, who lived in Acne, he had an old guitar that they had in the family years ago. Cut a long story short, he done it up, and I went over there and got it, and got the guitar. Little old Spanish guitar. And I started, because I didn't know anybody who played guitar.
Well, this is the thing that people don't realise. They were so rare, weren't they, in those days? I heard Tommy Steele on the radio not long ago saying the only time you ever saw a guitar was played by a cowboy in a film.
That's right, yeah.
By a musician.
Yeah. never see one in real life, like exactly what you said. You see him on films and might see him on the telly now and again. Yeah, I'd got this guitar and had no idea how to tune it. And my mum tuned it to a straight chord, which... it's not tuned to a chord.
Right.
It's tuned to whatever it is. But she tuned it to a straight chord, so you just played...
Just
the
barred it. And yeah.
Bar it over, yeah. And it sounded all right, and she was going... But I remember watching Lonnie on the telly, and watching his fingers doing that and that and that and that. And I thought, those shapes he's doing, that
doesn't make any sense.
Don't make sense at all. And it just so happened that over the road, I mean, skiffle groups were just about beginning to happen, and there was a bloke over the road who was about 4 or 5 years older than me that started a skiffle group. And my mum said, look, he said, he comes home from work about 5:30, so wait for him to come home and take the guitar and get him to tune it up. And exactly, I did that. I waited for him, see him come down the road, took it over to him, and I said, would you mind tuning my guitar for me? And of course, he tuned it up.
Properly.
Like that, and he played a couple of chords. I remember he played an E chord, and I thought, that sounds great. Took it back to me mum, and she went like that. And she said, that don't sound very good.
I said, he spoiled it.
Yeah. I said, that is the proper tune, and that's what he's done. So then I think I've got a book. No, he showed me a couple of chords, right? So I'd got a start, you know. And then I got hold of a little banjo that I got from a jumble sale. And I started getting pretty good on it. Although my mum said, oh, that's great, that's great, that's great. I thought, that's just me mum. Anyway, weren't long after, around the sweet shop, they used to put little signs in the window, you know, whatever, something for sale. There was a sign in the window around the sweet shop. She came back, she said, they want a guitar player in that skiffle group. Why don't you go for the audition? And I thought, how can I go for an audition in a skiffle group?
How old are you then?
I was 13.
Right, okay.
If I ain't good enough, you know, I might be good enough to strum along with a couple of records, but she said, you go. She said, you are good enough. You go. Anyway, cut long story short, I went. And they was over the moon with my playing. And I just floated back.
Because you were better than they were, probably.
Exactly, yeah.
So their lineup. It's classic skiffle group. What are you talking about? T-chest bass.
Yeah.
Washboard.
Yep.
Yeah, with their thimbles to make the sound on the washboard.
Yeah, yeah.
Good grief. Yeah. What were they called?
The band was called the Horseshoe Skiffle Group.
Okay. They always had to have that kind of Western type.
Yeah,
band.
Yeah.
So you played local gigs in Edmonton, Tottenham?
Yeah, the
sort
first,
of things?
I remember one of the first gigs I did was in a hole over the top of a pub in Edmonton called the Britannia. And I had the most fantastic night of my life. People dancing and clapping and cheering, and me strumming all these the skiffle songs. And at the end, someone come up and plonked a 10-bob note in my hand. And I went, what's that for? They said, oh, it's for tonight's, you know, your
10 shillings.
Show. Yeah.
It's and a lot of money.
It was then. And I thought, I really couldn't believe it, that I could have the best night I've ever had in my whole life. And then someone paid me for it.
Yeah.
And that was my ambition from that day. I thought, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life.
Well, you've achieved that.
And I'm still doing it now, yeah.
So let's move. So we're getting into the 60s now, and the sort of skiffles becoming the beat groups. And
Yeah.
At what point did you kind of plug in?
I joined there used to be this meeting place every Friday night called the King's Head. It was a great, different bands, and electric guitars were becoming evident, little amplifiers and all that. We were all experimenting because there wasn't a lot of good gear about in those days. And I used to borrow an electric guitar. It's take me acoustic down, but this one of the blokes had, one of the kids had two electric guitars. I used to borrow one. And someone that had the idea, we'd heard about electric basses, but
you never seen one.
Hadn't seen them yet, no. He said, why don't you try tuning your bass strings down? Anyway, I started tuning the bass strings. It sounded quite good. And then it wasn't long after, I see an advert for a bass guitar I think it was the Revalley newspaper. They used to come out. Do you remember that?
Revalley, it was kind of glamour girls.
Yeah.
Cheering stories about the forces.
That's it.
Yeah, go on.
Right.
I'm that old, frankly.
They could buy a bass guitar. So I remember it was Bell Accordion, Surbiton, Surrey. And 40 guineas.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, 40 guineas was like, anybody who don't know, is like £40 plus 40 shillings. Yeah, so £42.
Yeah.
got it on the knot. I remember my granddad signed his
got it on the knot means yeah. Higher purchase. Yeah. Because the only way you could get a thing like yeah. that in those days.
And got this, funny enough, I got, when the Dame, the base arrived, 1959, my mate was in the skiffle group, played electric guitar. I've just got a postcard from him today, actually, this really? Very day. He lives in Italy now, he's coming over. And anyway, he said, oh, I was there when you got that bass. I've still got it, still use it, actually. But, yeah, I got the bass, and I had a little amp I used to play indoors, right, and just play along with records, and it used to sound great. And it really was, I just put a record on, I mean, they started buying a few Elvis records and a few Jerry Lee records, and I plugged the bass in, and it used to sound fantastic, you know, alongside the, used to get crowds of kids standing outside my front door listening to it, you know. And finally came the time we're going to do a gig. Took me little amp up to the King's Head, and it was quite a biggish hall in those days. Plugged it in, and it just sounded horrible. It just didn't. I thought it was going to sound like it did in my front room.
It didn't fill the room. Didn't fill the bigger space.
No, definitely not. And I ended up buying. I remember seeing Cliff Richard and the Shadows in Walthamstow, Granada. And Jet Harris had this great big bass amp that Wallace in Soho Street made for him. And he sold it on to someone else. The Hunters, Dave Sampson and the Hunters. And then I found out it was for sale, this amp that I'd seen, and I went and bought it. It took like three people to carry it. It really did. But it didn't have a sound to it.
Really?
And that became my amp. And I was a fully-fledged bass player. The band was formed, called the Stormers. We went to Butlins in 1960.
You went to Butlins and Filey?
Yeah. Yeah, that was great. That was absolutely fantastic.
So was it like, you know, Ringo in That'll Be the Day? You know, we've all seen bands in, you know, in playing Butlins in the late 50s and early 60s.
Yeah,
all the girls you could possibly...
Yeah, most definitely, yeah. It was
wish
great.
To be friendly with.
It was absolute heaven. It was like, I just couldn't believe it. And everything I do, I still do now, you think it's going to carry on for the rest of your life. I mean, I was there for 3 months. And... we was getting 20 quid a week each in 1960, which is...
It's a lot of money.
Blooming good money, yeah. And, you know, different girlfriend every week. You all cried when that one went home and then got to meet the coach when the new one turned up.
So it's like being a red coat, but with additional glamour, really.
Yeah,
being
in a rock and roll band. Just playing the guitar. I mean, what more could you wish for?
Right. So you're starting to get into the professional... Well, that was professional.
Yeah.
So when did you first start making records?
When we came back, a couple of the boys got hooked up with girls, and one of them got married, and the other one decided to get married, and the band began to sort of, like, fall apart. The odd gig here and there, I was really fed up. I got a job and then didn't like that very much, and it didn't seem long after. I think it was about... the September or the October, so a couple of months after we got back from Butlins, and the band was like crumbling, virtually had split up. I got a knock on my front door, and it was this chap who'd come down to see us at Butlins with a singer called Danny Rivers, who we'd done a couple of demo tapes with. And he said, look, he said, I've got a singer. He said, I don't know if you've heard of Joe Meek, which I didn't. He said, he's an independent record producer. He said, up at Holloway Road. And I said, I've got this singer, Mike Berry, who he loves, but he don't like his band very much. He said, if I could get your band back together, would you come up and audition for Mike Berry's backing band? I went, yeah, you know, I'll be there. So he got the rest of the band together, and we went up and auditioned at Joe Meek's, and he absolutely loved it. This was about the beginning of 1961.
So he hadn't had Telstar, he wasn't...
No. Nah.
He hadn't had the huge hits yet.
No, nah, he'd
starting
had...
starting to.
Yeah, he'd had Angela Jones, Michael Cox, that was a hit. Yeah, one or two semi, you know, sort of just about reached.
So you were
charts.
Getting in there at the early part of...
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That whole Joe Meek... Holloway Road studio thing has been mythologized and films made about it. You were in the film,
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, tell us, what was it like?
It really was like the film. I mean, Nick Moran, who produced and directed it, I mean, he had a meeting with me. The people pointed, because I was up there from 1961 till about 65. We were Joe's house band.
In the house band.
The Outlaws.
So who else will be in that group? Right, so this was the Outlaws, right?
Yeah, originally it was me on the bass guitar, Reggie Hawkins rhythm guitar, Billy Kiley guitar, Bobby Graham drums, who became the massive session man in the 60s, probably he was on everything. Great drummer. So that was the original Outlaws, then they sort of... then the guitar player left, or he got the sack, can't remember now. And we got in Richie Blackmore... who was with Screaming Lord Sutch at the time. We'd seen him, and we started earning a few bob, so we nicked Richie off Sutch. And he became part of the house band. We recorded things like Just Like Eddie with Hines. Richie was playing on that. But before that, one of my first recordings was Johnny Remember Me. John Layton,
right?
Yeah. That was, I think it was 61, I think that was. Might have been 62. But that was number one. Well, I was 16 then.
So you just got session money, presumably.
Yeah.
A few quid for doing the session. That was your lot.
£7, which I thought was fantastic. That suited me down to the ground.
Right.
I mean...
And you learned very quickly, presumably.
Of course,
as a session man, you've got to pick it up really quick.
Yeah. I've always been pretty quick at picking up stuff. I mean, so I could hear from music that I inherited from my mum and my nan and my great-grandfather. So, yeah, sessions were great. I mean, they used to come in. Joe Meek used to be like, they used to sort of roll them in, say, to this next. Usually, like, if they got a pretty face... they couldn't sing, you know. So if someone had come in a bit ugly, you think, oh, great, he's got a good singer. And I was right every time.
You've been listening to the free feed of The Word podcast. The full album-length version is only available to subscribers to the magazine. To sign up and to hear the rest of this podcast, go to www.wordpodcast.co.uk.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.